Hello, Patriots. I'm Lee Watts, and this is Patriot Point. And this week, we're going to be doing something special. We're going to be looking at 10 things you probably don't know about the U.S. Constitution. Now, the reason we're doing that is now here in September, this marks the 235th anniversary of our nation's key document. Back in 1787 is when it was ratified. So we're going to be looking at 10 things that you probably don't know, not 10 things that you should know, because we should already know those things. If you don't know them, then there's lots of courses online. Let me tell you that with a warning. While I was doing research on this, I found there is a huge number of lessons online about the Constitution that are teeming with liberal philosophy. They don't come right out and say it. They'll sneak it in with little side comments or a very leftist slant on historical events and the retelling of those. So be careful to find a good conservative group when you are getting lessons on the Constitution. I've made two documentaries about the Constitution, one on the biblical principles in the Constitution itself, and the other on the biblical principles of the Bill of Rights. If you would like to get either of these documentaries, I've got the link in the description of this video where you can get them directly. So now let's get to 10 things that you probably don't know about the U.S. Constitution. Number 10 is the Constitution is not always at where it is right now. Back during World War II, when the Japanese were attacking Pearl Harbor, we thought the Constitution might come under attack in Washington, D.C. So, during that time, the Constitution was moved away from the National Archive building in D.C. and taken to what they thought would be the safest place in America, and that was Kentucky. That's right. During the attack of Pearl Harbor, the U.S. Constitution was flown by emergency over to Fort Knox, Kentucky. At the bottom of the Constitution is where the people would sign it, and it was divided by state. But one of the things which is interesting is somebody misspelled the name of the state of Pennsylvania. It's supposed to have two N's, but they actually only put one in there. The dictionary had only recently been invented. There's actually a great deal of grammatical and spelling errors in the Constitution. Here's the eighth thing you may not know about the U.S. Constitution, is that it is the smallest constitution for any government in existence today. In its original draft in 1787, the Constitution only had 4,400 words. It has general principles of government, and it left the smaller details of government up to the states. And state constitutions are usually 3 to 5 times as big as the federal constitution. Here's an interesting fact about the Constitution. During the Constitutional Convention, a full 40% of the delegates were military veterans. That is not the way it is today. In Congress right now, only 17% of representatives are former veterans. In the Senate, it's 24%. But who better to lead the nation than those who have first served the nation? The sixth thing that you probably don't know about the Constitution is a phrase. And when most people say this, they think they're quoting the Constitution. And that phrase is, "No taxation without representation." This phrase, however, is nowhere in the Constitution. Neither is it in the Bill of Rights, nor is it in the Declaration of Independence. This was a common idea in the early colonies, but where did this line come from? It actually came from a sermon. Back in the early 1700s, they would print sermons for people to read. And this was a sermon printed from the pastor named Jonathan Mayhew, and a sermon he preached in the year 1750. is where the line originates from, and many of the founding fathers read that, and that was one of the principles they fought for. So the line, no taxation without representation, actually came from a pastor. The fifth thing you may not know about the Constitution is that there was not supposed to be a Constitution. Originally, after we won the Revolutionary War, we set up a government under what is called the Articles of Confederation. But that wasn't strong enough to really run the country, so the delegates from the states were called together simply to make amendments and revisions to the Articles of Confederation. That was the purpose and the reason that they were called. That's all they were empowered to do. However, after this convention was called, it got out of control. They decided to completely throw out the document the government that was run under, the Articles of Confederation, to write an entirely new document, really create an entirely new country, and then change the means for how any changes can be approved. Because the way it had to be approved under where they were called, they didn't like that, so they changed the rules. And this same type thing is in the U.S. Constitution today. Article 5 would allow for there to be a constitutional convention. But there's a line in there which would allow Congress to completely change the rules of how to approve any changes that the convention would call. And the Article 5, paragraph 1 says you can approve it this way, that way, or by this. It says, or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. Which means Congress, during the convention or before or after, can completely change the rules on how any changes could be made. The fourth thing you may not know about the Constitution is that it is required by law to be taught in our public schools and required by law that it be taught to every single federal government employee. Let me show you what I'm talking about here. According to federal law, 108-447, section 111, it says, each educational institution that receives federal funds for a fiscal year shall hold an education program on the United States Constitution on September 17 of such year for the students served by the educational institution. So your school better be having a class, some kind of assembly, on the Constitution on September the 17th or the school day closest to it. Also, federal employees get this. Notice what it says. Each federal agency or department shall provide educational and training materials concerning the United States Constitution to each employee on September 17 of each year. So if you're a student, you've got to get a lesson on it. If you're a federal employee, not only do they have to give you a lesson on it, they have to provide you with educational materials. So if they haven't given you a little Constitution, then you go over and you say, hey, the law says that this must be taught. The third thing that you probably don't know about the Constitution has to deal with something which is being pushed a lot, it's being taught nowadays, and it's completely wrong. A lot of people say, well, the Constitution says that we have three separate and equal branches of government. No, it doesn't. Nowhere in the United States Constitution does it ever say that we have three separate and equal branches of government. It says we have three separate branches. It never says that these are three equal branches. Quite the opposite is in the pages. Actually, the legislative branch is superior to both the executive and to the judicial. And for years, the Congress would simply ignore the Supreme Court saying, we're going to declare such and such a law as unconstitutional, you can't do it. And Congress would say, thank you for your opinion, and they would do it anyway. So we have three separate branches of government, but it has never been intended, nor does it ever say that they are supposed to be three equal branches. So So we have three separate branches of government, but where did the founding fathers get this idea? A lot of people, just as Americans, think, well, that's just the way that governments are. And that's not correct. This was the first time in all of world history that there had been a separation of powers. Before then, all of the legislative, executive, and judicial power was with either one person or a very small elite group combined together with all of these powers. So this was the first time it was ever laid down. This idea actually came from a biblical principle in Isaiah chapter 33, verse 22, which says, "For the Lord is our judge, judicial branch. The Lord is our lawgiver, legislative branch. The Lord is our king, executive branch." So we see here a biblical principle for the separation of powers in Articles 1, 2, and 3 of the Constitution. And here is the number one thing that most people probably don't know about the U.S. Constitution. And that has to do with the separation of church and state. If you read the Constitution, every single word, you will never find the line, the separation of church and state. It's not in there. A lot of people think when they're quoting this line, they're quoting the Constitution.
This year, 25,000 will die in traffic-related automobile accidents. About 50,000 fatalities. One half of those will be alcohol-related. Now,
and here is the number one thing that most people probably don't know about the U.S. Constitution. And that has to do with the separation of church and state. If you read the Constitution, every single word, you will never find the line, the separation of church and state. It's not in there. A lot of people think when they're quoting this line, they're quoting the Constitution. They are not. They are neither are they quoting the Bill of Rights. It does not have this line either. So where did this idea and this line come from, the separation of church and state? This actually came from Thomas Jefferson when he was writing a group of pastors. The Danbury Baptist Association of Connecticut was afraid of something in the Bill of Rights. Now remember, who wrote the Declaration of Independence? Was Thomas Jefferson. And in the Declaration, it says, "All men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights." Unalienable meaning these are not able to be taken away. These were given by your Creator. No man can take them away. But the Danbury Baptist Association of Connecticut was concerned about the First Amendment, because in the First Amendment, it guarantees freedom of religion. But it never says that this is an unalienable right that you are endowed by your Creator with. And they're concerned, government gave us this right, so maybe one day government will take it away. Here's the letter that they wrote Jefferson, who is at this time the President of the United States. "Religion is considered as the first object of legislation. And therefore, what religious privileges we enjoy as a minor part of the state, we enjoy as favors granted and not as inalienable rights." So you can hear the concern there. They're worried one day the government's going to be legislating their religious liberty. So notice what Jefferson, as president, writes back to reassure these pastors that the government's never going to get into telling the church when they can meet, what they can preach about. Notice what he says. "I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature would make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." So that, dear viewer, is where the phrase comes from. Now, in this exchange of letters, was the concern that one day the people in the church are going to have way too much influence on government, and we're concerned about that. Was that the concern? No, the concern was one day the government is going to be telling us what we can and cannot do, when we can and cannot meet, what we can and cannot preach about. The concern was government's intrusion into the church It was never concerned about the church and the people of the church being in government. And yet today, this phrase is used backwards. So there are 10 things that most people probably didn't know about the U.S. Constitution. Again, if you'd like to get some of the biblical principles of the Constitution, make sure you get that documentary. The link's in the description. So until next week, I'm Lee Watts for Patriot Point, reminding you that liberty is not a spectator sport.
Patriot Point is brought to you by God and Country Ministry.